was basically the same as all the other disagreements we had in that the Senate version implies that the definition is extended to people who previously lived with a defendant, and of course the House version says people who are related to the second degree by blood or marriage. And I think that seems to be the real basis of the argument or disagreement between the two bills.
Section 11?
Section 11, well, the definition of domestic violence crops up throughout the bill.
There was no
five sections.
There was no previous disagreement over the fourth, you know, assault in fourth degree?
No.
No. Okay. No, there's no difference. He said five.
Does it accurately state that the single point which has not yet been agreed upon is the definition of domestic violence?
That's the main problem.
No.
No. No, we have identified a couple of other differences.
Oh. But that's
what we were
the main
doing,
one.
If I may.
Sure.
We were going through the bill and identifying those areas. First of all, the areas where the bills differed. Secondly, the areas where the bills differed where it appeared that there would be no controversy. That is, in several cases, I had recommended the Senate language. The Senate language had approved the bill, and there had been, while there had been no votes, Rick was chairing it and had made a tentative indication that no one opposed the recommendation that the Senate language be adopted on several. So even though some of them were different, there was tentative resolution. One we skipped over and have not discussed yet is the service of process, which is different than the two bills. We haven't even covered that yet. And we are now then to the one you just mentioned, which is section 11 of the Senate Committee. There is and the other thing we were doing, Senator Rudy, is just not only identifying the differences between the two bills, but for those who haven't worked on this for a number of months, briefly identifying what the bill does.
Maybe the
so is that appropriate to go ahead with that procedure? Is that all right?
So it might be appropriate then to start with the service of process question.
Well, if we don't get to that till that's the last section of the House bill, and what I had proposed is we put that off to the end until we get to that part of it. Been trying to go through the bill in order.
Fine, that's no problem.
Section 11, then, in the Senate Committee substitute, starting on line 25, is same as page 3 on line 18 of the House version. There is no difference between the two. The change was to correct an error when the bill was adopted. It did not reflect changes that occurred in the criminal code with the identification of degrees of assault. So the purpose of the amendment is to simply conform the bill with the criminal code that was adopted. Not, in my view, a particularly substantive change, and the two bills do agree. Should I go ahead?
Continue.
Section 12 of the Senate Committee substitute, starting on line 7. There is a difference between the two bills, actually, on line 8. If you'll refer to the House version, page 4, line 1. The change from police officer to peace officer is the same in the two bills. The purpose of that, there is a definition later on, but the purpose of that is to pick up other types of officers that was felt did not fall within the definition of police officer. Police officer. The best example we've been using is village public safety officers. They would be authorized to provide the notices and otherwise be covered by the legislation. Again, there's no difference between the House and Senate version on that. Later in that line, you will see a difference. The existing law provides that the notice that must be given to the victim, which is what Section 12 is about, shall be either orally or in writing, depending on the circumstances. The House bill would change that and require that it be both oral and in writing. The evidence presented, at least to the House, was that in many cases that notice was not being provided in an effective form, and that it was felt that the requiring it orally and in writing would assure that the notices did actually go, that the victim actually knew what the victim's rights were.
I can't agree with the House on that unless there's major objection.
Well, let me raise a question that raised during the judiciary committee. I think you were here at the time. I'm not sure. And that was the one, the first time the bill had come up in House Judiciary was we had a, and I can't remember his name since, I'm sorry, but he was the lieutenant colonel or something in the troopers. And the picture he painted for us was just a trooper who got somebody on a handcuff over here on one hand, and he's got his other stuff. He's, you remember that, Terry?
Yep.
He's dragging this, trying to drag this thing out of his pocket and read it, and a distraught victim on one hand and a sealant, you know, handcuffed to the other hand, and he was trying to read this thing, just his rights. And, I did get that, thank you. I have me. This was the testimony was given. That was the question we brought up before.
Right. Basically, it's a balancing act in this case. Against, I think that we would all agree that theoretically, the House language is better. You know, in terms of being able to, the problem is, and the peace officers have been relatively candid in, you know, wanting to minimize the amount of official things they have to do because sometimes the circumstances are difficult. But the real question is, of course, that if the circumstances become difficult for them and they don't like to do it, they're going to be inclined to be less responsive to domestic violence. I think that's the underlying. I could probably write down a whole laundry list of important things to do in the process, and Don, I know you could too. I think we have to draw a line at a place where the people that are actually responding to the domestic incidents will feel comfortable enough that they won't have problems going into them and won't be complaining all the time. It won't be a major bone of contention that'll possibly reduce the effectiveness.
Let me make the argument on the other side, and perhaps this is the same argument that Senator Fahrenkamp was going to make. Not pronouncing correctly, but I apologize. The matter of whether or not it's in writing is basically not a problem. That is, many of the police departments have prepared a simple card which they do automatically deliver when they go to a domestic violence situation. One of the reasons that the House felt that we ought to require that it also be done orally is that in many cases is a mechanism for calming down the situation. For separating the two parties and sitting one of the parties down and talking to that party about what's happening. It's a way of cooling tempers, a way of separating the two and providing a period of time where people can start to calm down. That's the reason for encouraging it to be done orally. I think that what's happening now is the written part of it is being done, the oral part is not.
The only point I have, I like both of them in there, but at the time, the peace officer is going to have to use quick judgment. I don't see even know the individual can read, you know, if you present him or she a card, especially with our many bilingual people here, or foreign language people wouldn't be bilingual. So by enabling the ability for both oil and written, he can get the message across maybe one way or the other. You have it printed. What about the memento statements? I seldom see them, at least not on TV. They don't pass the card to the person and say, read your rights. They read it for them.
We're talking about something. If it were as short as Miranda warning, it would probably be a little bit a little bit different. And also, they're in the process of they're arresting somebody. They've got somebody on that. It's going to jail one way or the other.
Yeah, but in this is a thing, it's different.
Yeah, the concern. My concern is that the police officers have been very clear that they don't like to have to sit down and act as, they like to act as peace officers. And to the extent that we put them into other roles, they become less effective in those roles.
and they don't like those roles, and they tend to then pull back from domestic violence. We don't want them to do that. As I say, we could put more duties on them that I think would be good under the circumstances, but at some point then they all, you know, that you'd have to just mention, yell, there's a domestic, you know, violence call, and the guy can scatter. You wouldn't be able to find anybody. And I think you have to try and balance it out. So how can you get effective police response to a domestic violence situation? That's really what we're talking about. Nobody's talking about the desirability of the house entry, because I agree it's more desirable, but I want something that works. And I've been out in the street. I was federal attorney. Don, you've seen it, and I know as a very practical matter, it does have an impact on how the police respond. If my position is a minority one in the committee, I'm certainly willing to go on. But that was my perception, and I think that was perhaps a perception of other members of the judiciary committee. Mr. Parkin certainly helped me speak his behalf.
I've never been out there like you guys. I just didn't know what that man had testified, you see, and that was what I was basing it on. He posed what seemed to be a very practical problem. I don't know if he stressed that, whether it is that much of a problem or not, but if it'll work, obviously everybody agrees it's desirable to read it too, because the person may not read English or read it very well or whatever. I have no problem with that. If it'll work, practical. That was my objection, that the one of the guy who testified, who said no, since he's lieutenant colonel of the troopers, said we got some practical problems.
That's a choice. That's
the one.
Well, why don't we just list that as one of our
areas of
sheriff
board and rating.
Well, we can go on and come back to that. Section 13 of this. Senate committee substitute starts on the last line of page 4. The substance of it's on page 5. This in the House version, this starts the section 12, page 4, starting on line 24. Once again, it's the same definition of domestic violence, the same differences that appear in the House and Senate versions before. In addition to that, there is a definition of peace officer, which is identical, isn't it, to Kevin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there is no difference in that definition. Of course, it refers back to what we just used in the sentence previously. Both of the bills repeal 955-620B and 1225-030C. I have a momentary lapse. I can't remember what those are. The two bills don't differ at any rate.
Repealers, though, I always like to know what they're doing.
Yeah. Those are
specific sections.
And the 1225-030C is it reads as used in the section. Well,
this is in your in those folders that I gave everyone in
the statutory, the current statute. This is in use of the section, household means a social unit comprised of those living together in the same dwelling.
So we're repealing that and adopting.
Repealing the conflicting definition. Oh, I remember what C is, 620C. It's in your packet. It's the provision that requires that the form that's filled out when you get one of these temporary injunctions. You're a victim, you go into court, you pick up this form to fill out. The form now requires in 620C that you
there's a warning.
There's a warning. There's a warning that says that if you commit make a false statement, that it's here it is. A form for a petition prepared under A of this section shall include a notice that a false statement made in it stating that the respondent has subjected the petitioner to domestic violence constitutes a crime of unsworn falsification, which is punishable by a maximum term of imprisonment one year and $5,000 fine. It's a provision that was added, I believe, on the Senate floor last year. It's a provision that says that on the form that the woman, typically the woman, fills out when she asks for one of these injunctions, says in big letters on the form, if you lie, you can go to jail for a year. We, I didn't support that provision last year. It's not in any other legal form that's provided to the public. It would tend to be a deterrent to people who don't understand the implications of that, and of course, would be a crime if in fact it happens, whether it's on the farm or not. And
we have a blanket thing in the statute somewhere that says if you accuse somebody of a crime false swearing, what you call it, that's automatically a crime period.
That's what it refers to. Unsworn falsification under 1156.210.
There's even a more effective deterrent, and that's contempt of court. And this may, the problem by the unsworn falsification may, you know, the old Latin maxim, by specifically putting something in, you exclude contempt of court as, though you never completely exclude it, certainly you push it down the scale several notches as a device that can be used. I think that's the most effective device that can be used in behalf of victims of domestic violence, or to ensure the police court process, because the courts take a very extremely dim view of false documents, and there are not the statutory problems. The court has fairly broad authority to regulate the flow of documents and punish people for putting false documents before the court. So Don's point's well taken.
And of course, both bills do repeal the House bill. Okay, that leaves us then, if I can go
continue,
with in the House version, page 5, section 13, the service of process section. Now, this is the one that we skipped over in the Senate version. It is section 5 of the Senate version on page 2, starting on line 14. The House version tries to accomplish several. One of the breakdowns and the difficulties in this process under this legislation is getting process served quickly because it's an emergency procedure. The first sentence is identical. It says that process served shall be promptly served and executed, which gives it a priority that the House and Senate both felt was important. The second sentence is different. In the House version, the Commissioner of Public Safety may designate a peace officer to serve and execute process under this. In the Senate version, it says that if a state peace officer is not available, and we're speaking essentially of troopers here, the Superior Court, the District Court or the Magistrate, may designate any other peace officer to serve and execute process. The essential difference there is that a judge can designate a municipal police officer to serve process if it's an emergency situation.
As far as I'm concerned, that's one of the most serious sections and differences in the bill. And I think the Senate version is needed.
The other, just to finish on what the differences are, the other language in the House version relates to the powers of the commissioner, which obviously is all deleted in the Senate version. And then the Senate has a final sentence that says a peace officer shall use every reasonable means to serve process, which once again is to assure that these are identified as emergency cases and that they got to get served strictly. So basically the difference is the House version says that the state's got to provide somebody to serve process, and the Senate version says that if the court orders it, it could be a municipal police officer.
The municipal police officers don't like that, but
who's going to like them?
Judging out of my memory, and I hope, I'm not sure, Terry, if you were there back when the House Judiciary was first looking at this thing, we had a meeting in Anchorage. Representative Anderson, who at that time was chief of police here. I may be wrong in my memory, but I'm certain that my memory tells me that the city police in Anchorage did not want to do this unless there were additional money given to the city of Anchorage to pay for it. Now, maybe it was somebody else, but I quite, do you remember that testimony somewhere along the way? If the city police would have to do it, at least in Anchorage, they wanted some money, but they didn't want to do it for free. They said their budget was already stretched as far as it would go, and it all was going to be handled already.
It was also talking about training and special sensitive people.
I don't really know. What the story is as far as municipal police doing it.
I think, at least in my own case, the rationale was that by having a flexible process where the court can, each local court can determine who's the most effective server of process is perhaps the most desirable. Having a commissioner in Juneau designate that, I'm not...
Just slows down the process.
I'm not sure that that's going to be the most efficient, and I think that's at least in the Senate side what we're striving towards, is a very, very practical, workable bill, and one that really works. Mr. Martin?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we accept the Senate motion.
Is there any objection to Mr. Martin's motion? If there's no objection to that motion, the Senate language is adopted.
That completes the review. I frankly don't recall right now. There was a zero fiscal note in the House. I don't believe there was any fiscal note in the Senate.
The same as that. Yeah.
Chairman.
Senator Buckley.
It seems to me that the key difference in the bills, more than anything else, is that definition of what's the scope of the parent's past requirements. We had some discussion on that.
I brought up to date.
I think you were familiar with it from before anyway.
Yes.
We discussed it in the House. To me, it's kind of almost a matter of legal philosophy of the law or something. It's just where and to what extent do you carve out enclaves that are specific and not under the general law. That's probably the wrong terminology, but between you and Mr. Fox, and I'm sure you put it in the right terminology. That's the essential question to me.
Well, if I understand what you're saying, that there's a philosophy of law that generally the same law ought to apply to everybody, and that to the extent that there are exceptions to that, those exceptions ought to be limited as much as possible. And I agree with that. You may recall that in the Senate there were some new proposals in the Senate to expand the language even further to bring more people to the definition so that they could take advantage of this procedure, and I oppose those on the same basis as Senator Parr's legal philosophy. I think that for one practical reason, we are right out on the cutting edge of what's constitutional here. And I think that to the extent that we make it any broader than we have to, we may run into serious constitutional problems, because we are providing an accelerated process that moves fast and to some extent limits the right of a respondent to respond, and it's because it's an emergency situation that we can justify that. To the extent that we expanded beyond those emergency situations where, as I indicated before, there's this psychological dependence that makes the present existing law inappropriate, we start to step over the edge of what's legally permissible. I don't believe that either of the two changes, the one in the Senate version or the one in the House version, steps over that law. I believe that both of them do stay within the bounds of what was originally intended, which is the people who have a relationship that stops them from using the normal criminal procedures. I'm very conscious of what Senator Parr is saying, and believe that I would still be comfortable with inserting either or both of the provisions that are in.
Let me get the rationale for the Senate language. It's, again, a practical rationale. We're trying to deal equally, and I think you made that argument very well, with people. The chief difference in language is whether people have that relationship. Obviously, families, I think the House language is good in that respect. The families and what have you are covered. There's no question about that. But whether people live together, that group of people contributes to the situation that we're addressing in the bill, and it would not be very practical to put them out, you know, without the purview of the law. Mr. Martin?
Senator, I kind of agree with this, though, you're putting up now. I look at the respondent to this here. If a something happens and there's a disturbance in the household, and then the police department, if you finally get them on the phone, will say, well, what's the problem? Do you say domestic violence? Do you say violence? Do you say what? Then you have to think, well, at what relationship am I with this person? And I think we're going beyond that person when we say another person who had previously lived with the person. It might have been a year ago, it might have been 10 weeks ago, it might have been 3 or 4 years ago. And that's where I say we're stretching it. Those things are already covered in other criminal acts. And I went to Senator that who's ever living in that household at that time. Not a previous dependent or something like that.
I'm just going to throw out some language that may address your problem. What if we were to have that language read, or a person who previously lived with the respondent in the position of a spouse, or as a spouse, or as though a spouse.
Putative spouse.
Putative is a legal word. I hate to use those if we can avoid it. But something that indicates that it's not just a roommate, or it's not just a weekend fling or something. It's a person who lived in a longer term basis, on a longer term basis. That's it.
People do arrest the hell out of people sometimes.
But you gotta have
ways to stop. As a practical matter, of course, domestic violence occurs with people because they have problems, separate, and one of them isn't in the house. So we would be, taking those people from out purview of the bill, which, again, I don't think is a very practical approach.
Let me ask a question. I'm sure one of the attorneys present will be able to answer.
By definition, that's impossible.
Suppose you have, and it's fairly common today, much more than used to be, suppose a homosexual marriage relationship, call it what you will, this applies, right?
Sure.
You've got two guys, and one of them beats up on the other one. They're covered with this bill, or well, that's been a couple of years.
Ms. Fox?
I would say that under the Senate language, they would, on the House language, they would not, and I would submit that they ought to be covered.
I think, in the basic thing, whether you can take to the Senate or the House.
If they're still living together, that's true, because they're a member of the social unit.
Yep. Okay.
I would argue that they should, in fact. That's a perfect example of where you can use the psychological dependence test. If that is true, if there is a relationship there that makes the criminal law irrelevant, where the criminal law is not going to be used because of the relationship they have.
I just by definition, I suspect the courts will probably find that as we draft this language, particularly if they've complied with state laws regarding marriage, there's no way that they would be exempted under that circumstance. And it would be very difficult to draft language that the court would, find them excluded from the definition. So my initial feeling is that the courts would probably be inclined to find them within the group rather than without the group.
Senator Faircamp. We have people that are, very interested in this and followed it for a number of years. And we mentioned yesterday that perhaps there come a time when we would grant them the right, to express their views on it. Would this be appropriate time to do that on this subject? If there's someone who would want to say something about it?
We have 20 minutes before session. It would not be inappropriate at an afternoon meeting where we did not have to go on the floor immediately.
Mr. Chairman, in line with trying to come up with a definition, I'd like to get a better understanding on what coverage do ex-spouse already have, ex-members of a household who are already out. Because in my mind, just as a layperson, I thought those kind of situations were already pretty well settled, whether in joint relationships or in problems with divorces or whatever. I always think that once we get out of that household, and I don't give a hoot who's in the house, but once we extend it to a person who previously lived, and then, you know, I think we're going too far, and I feel in my mind as a layman, that's already comforted someone that you haven't seen for 2 years comes in and bangs on your door and starts a disturbance. It's not a domestic violence, it's just that two family with another girl, you know, whatever.
Well, one of the difficulties with that is, of course, to exempt a number of people from coverage on the bill, which is not, I don't think, I think it would also, you have some constitutional, might have some constitutional problems, I don't know, but you certainly would have effects in rural Alaska, where benefit of clergy is not mm-hmm. not as culturally as uniform a practice as it might be in urban areas. So to that extent, that would be a second constitutional ground, and I think we want to take a look at those questions, and other than the desirability and practicability, but the legal aspect. Mr. Clarkson?
We're still on the question of whether we're going to hear witnesses. I guess we don't have time to do that.
I think we're the shortest of my work. I watch us like to.
Can we take a short recess?
Yes.
Alfred.
Sure.
Why don't make a strong position? I think what I'd like to get is a sense from the Senate of how it feels about the related by within the second degree language. It's possible to get an agreement that could go in a bill, and then what's left is Representative Martin's concerns with the people who aren't actually related but lived with the respondent in the past. Is it? I'm trying to do is figure out where we don't disagree or we don't have a problem.
Is there a problem with the House language with regard to the definition of
second degree?
Of the second degree?
That was a problem I had last year. It comes back to us, how far are we extending this, your basis of psychological dependence or something? You stretch that to cover the guy who habitually goes into a bar and has a psychological dependence on a bartender, you know, it's just, I have trouble stretching that thing before. This little section we're carving out and saying the equal protection of the laws, you know, is not good enough.
Kind of at least the one by blood, there's more than psychological, there's really physical relationship there too. And I would have no qualms on that, because hopefully it's one way in trying to keep the families, biological family, together. So, yeah, and especially when we talk about grandparents now, the abuse there and so on. And I think there's always a dependency there. The other one was made in another way. By mutual agreement for temporary purposes.
Perhaps we're best to adjourn the meeting and also leave that question, the first part of the definition unresolved as well.
Okay. So I have we agreed on everything else in the bill? I have a note here. Martin.
Mr. Bruce?
Yeah, we have not agreed on section 2, the difference in the language of there. There didn't appear to be any major controversy, but or perhaps we could just go ahead and settle that.
Well, in my notes, I have us agreeing on sections 1, 2, 3, and 4.
I have a note that Representative Martin had some question on the addition of the minor child. Has that been resolved in your mind?
No, because I forgot about that. No, I don't have any confidence
in that. It would be appropriate to move that.
Yes.
Move the Senate language for section 2.
Any objection? No objection, so ordered.
So we have, basically all we have left is the definition. Sir.
And or.
Oh, on the question of
oh, and or, yeah.
Can I ask before we adjourn?
Yes.
We're going to check the Displaced Homemakers Bill to determine if there were any other differences besides the floor amendment on the Senate, the changed unpaid on salary.
I've not done that yet.
We'll take care of that. Okay. If there are no matters to come before the committee will be adjourned.
Down to two.